Ferris B'nai Torah presents The Shmooze, an engaging and motivating Mussar and Hashkafa series that deals with real-life issues.
The tapes this evening are sponsored by good friends of the Brooklyn Ferris B'nai Torah, Mr. and Mrs. Shmuley Taub, in honor of the birth of their daughter. At the end of Shlomo Melech's days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry, was upset with Shlomo Melech, and the pasuk is very clear in stating that Vayelech Shlomo went in ways that Hashem was not pleased with. Vayash Shlomo harabe in Hashem, Shlomo did that which was considered wicked in Hashem's eyes. Hashem appeared to Shlomo and said, because you did not guard my bris, because you were not like David, your father, therefore I'm going to take the melucha from you. The melucha will be stolen from you. Ach b'yamecha lo asen, I will not do it in your days. It's not while you're alive that the melucha, that your kingdom will be stolen from you, but from your children it will be taken. I will leave but one part, one small part of your monarchy will remain with your children out of regards for your father David, but most of your melucha will be taken from you. Around this time, there was a man whose name, Yeravam ben Nevat, who the Novi describes as an Ish Gibor Chayil, a very great man. And he was recognized by Shlomo HaMelech as such, and Shlomo HaMelech appointed him to be a head of Shevet, a head of a very important position, Beis Yosef. And this man, Yeravam, was not only a great man, he was also a big Talmud Chacham. One day he was leaving Yerushalayim, and Achia Shiloni, the Novi Hashem, meets him. And he's wearing a Salma Chadoshe, he's wearing a new coat. And Achia Shiloni goes over to Yeravam ben Nevat, grabs this new coat, rips it into shreds, takes 10 of the shreds, gives them to Yeravam ben Nevat, and says, this is the melucha. This is what you're going to receive. You're going to receive 10 of the shvatim. The one part you will not be given, because so said Hashem, that you will be given to be a king in Yisrael. But Achia Shiloni continued the nevuah. Not only are you going to be a melech b'Yisrael, but if you go in the ways of Hashem, if you remain loyal, your house will rival that of David HaMelech. Your monarchy will be such that it will be on the same par as David. And with that, Achia Shiloni let him go. Not long thereafter, Shlomo HaMelech died, and Rehovam, Shlomo's son, took over, acceded to kingship. Rehovam made a blunder. The Klai Yisrael appealed to him and said, the taxes that your father weighed against the Klai Yisrael were too high, relinquish them, and instead of listening to the people, instead of listening to the wise advisors that he had, he listened to the younger advisors, and he took a very high-handed, haughty approach, and he refused to lower the taxes, at which point 10 of the Shvatim left Rehovam and went to Yeravam ben Nevat, and the nevuah of Achia Shiloni was fulfilled. Yeravam ben Nevat became a melech over 10 of the Shvatim, and he was in that position. In the beginning, he was a very righteous king and was going in a very great way. However, Yeravam made a cheshbon. Yeravam ben Nevat said to himself as follows, it's coming up Shavuot, it's coming up Sukkot, and in the Shviyas, in the seventh year of Sukkot, the king is to gather the Klai Yisrael in the Beis HaMikdash for the mitzvah of Vayakel to read a portion of the Sefer Torah. However, there is a particular nuance in that halacha. If one is a king from Beis David, he's allowed to sit in the Beis HaMikdash. If one is a leader of the Klai Yisrael, but not from Beis David, not from David's lineage, he is not allowed to sit, he must stand during the ceremony. And because of this, Yeravam ben Nevat had a tremendous fear. He said, what's going to happen? Rehovam, Shlomo's son, is going to be there. He's from David's lineage. He's going to be sitting. I will be there as king of 10 Shvatim, but I will be standing. Everyone's going to see Rehovam sitting, me standing. They're going to say the real king is Rehovam, and I'm going to lose my melucha. Even though he had a specific nevuah telling him that he would keep his kingship, even though he was told that his house would be the equal of David HaMelech's house, he did not have bitachon. And because of this, the Navi tells us that he told the Klai Yisrael, it's too far. To be ole regel, to go up to Yerushalayim is too far. Let's change it. and he erected two very large cows, and he said, Elo Elokecha Yisrael, these are your gods, and he instituted formally Avodah Zarah, idol worship, in the Jewish nation. Not only did he introduce this, he blocked the roads so that the Klal Yisrael could not go up to the base of Mikdash. And even more, the Navi says that he was Bodda Milibo. He invented on his own a new holiday. He felt that the seventh month, Tishrei, which is when the Klal Yisrael went up for Sukkot to be Ola Regel, there'd be a lack, there'd be something missing. So in the eighth month, he instituted his own holiday. He instituted Karbonos to be brought. And he was the first king that introduced idol worship to the Jewish nation. Up until this point, it was Shaul HaMelech, David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech, who were all great righteous kings. He was the first king that brought the Klal Yisrael to a very low level. At a certain point, the Pasuk says, Achar HaDvarim Ha'ele, after all that he did, still he did not return, he still did not do tshuva, and in fact, he died in this manner. He died, and it's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that says there are Gimel who do not have a chelik in Olam Haba. One of them, three kings, one of them is Yeruvim ben Nevat. But interestingly, the Gemara in Sanhedrin explains, what does it mean, Achar Advarim Ma'ela, that after these things he still didn't do tshuva? Says the Gemara as follows. Amar Rabbi Abba, Acha shetafsu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yeruvim bebigdo. Kaviyachol Hashem grabbed Yeruvim by the shirt collars. Yeruvim had gone to Tarbis Ra. He did Aveira after Aveira, and he brought the Klal Yisrael to a very low level. Finally, Hashem had enough. Hashem grabbed him by the shirt and said to him amazingly as follows. Chazor b'cha, do tshuva. Vani va'ata u'ben Yishai nitayel b'Gan Eden. You, I and Ben Yishai and David will walk together in Gan Eden. What was Yeruvim ben Nevat's response? Mi barosh. Who's first? Who's walking first? Me or David? Ben Yishai Barosh. Hashem answered back, David will be first. Ihachi lo ba'ina. If so, I don't want to do tshuva. Hashem said, you, David and I will walk together. Yeruvim ben Nevat said, if I'm not first, I'm not playing. And he effectively sealed his fate, doomed himself to eternal Gehenim. And this is how he ended his life. And I think when you see a chazal like this, it warrants asking a question. First question is, it seems that what he did was pretty dumb. I mean, listen, if you can't be number one, it doesn't mean that you count yourself totally out of the game. I mean, Moshlamat Dovadomer. You read all the time, Forbes magazines loves to rate the richest man in the world. So for the past 7 years, Bill Gates has been number one. And everyone reads that makes headlines. What's not as well played out is the fact that number two has been Warren Buffett. Okay. Now, to you and I, the difference between $47 billion and $42.5 billion may not be such a difference, but I got to imagine that Warren Buffett it's got to hurt to be number two year after year, not number one. Imagine if you'd read that Warren Buffett opens Forbes magazine and says, another year, number two, darn it, I can't stand it, I'm not going to work anymore. And that's it, he becomes a homeless bum. Right? Sleeping on a park bench, right? But that's what Yeruvim ben Nevat's doing. If I can't be number one, then I'm not playing the game. But he's checking out of Olam Haba. But he appreciates Olam Haba because he's concerned with who's number one. It's clear he's not saying, I don't care. I do care. I care so much that I need to be number one. I care so much that if I'm not number one, I'm not playing the game. But wait a minute, sir. If you care so much to be number one, then obviously you appreciate we're talking about eternity. We're talking about forever and ever who you'll be. And what's his response? If I can't be number one, I'm not playing the game. L'chora, that seems very dumb. All right, that's problem number one. But problem number two is that we're not vying for number one and number two position over here. The greatest man who ever lived was not David HaMelech. As a matter of fact, we know there's an order. It's Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, David, and Shlomo. You could have different opinions, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu before, but everyone is in agreement that David and Shlomo are on a different tier. They're not on the same level as the Avos. They're not on the same level of Moshe Rabbeinu. So what we're talking about over here is number six or number seven, not number one. You're anyway not number one. You're not going to have that coveted position. So what difference does it make, number six, number seven? And he's so troubled, so bothered by this, that he hachi lo ba'ina, he says to Hashem himself, I'm not part of the game. I think it warrants understanding what's pshat. What's pshat in this chazal? So before we actually answer this, I'd like to make an observation that we've sort of touched on before. And that is, in general, midos, character traits, are not logical. There is a part of man that is purely rational, purely intellectual, has great understanding, and only does things that are intelligent. That's the nefesh ha-sichli, that's that part of me that Hashem created, was under the kisei kovod, that only wants to do what's right and proper and good. There's a whole other dimension of the person. Included in that other dimension are various midos. Typically, when we see someone acting with bad midos, the response is, we ask, what are you thinking? When a guy walks in as if he is the biggest, most important, significant, weighty human being on the face of the planet, the first question you ask is, who do you think you are? What makes you think you're so great? But that's not a valid question. Why? Because there really is no source for his feeling great. He just feels great. He may not have a reason. He doesn't need a reason. It's an emotion. It's a feeling. When a guy gets into a fight with his boss, and he comes home and punches his fist through his closet door, that is not an intelligent thing to do. If he punched his fist through his boss's closet door, or maybe through his boss, we could discuss whether it should be done or not. But at least there's some sense. What sense is there in breaking your own wall because you're angry? But the answer is, it doesn't make sense, but it's not supposed to make sense. It's an emotion. It's a midah. It's a character trait. It's outside the shura, outside the rules of logic. Now that's true of all midos. I think it's especially true of jealousy, kinah. Kinah is probably one of the dumbest midos that exists. And if you think about it, just quickly see that it's illogical. Until he had the car, I didn't need it. The minute he had it, I had to have it. And not only did I have to have it, there was no other car on the planet except that one that I had to have. Now go explain that one to me. Before he had it, I didn't need it. Once he has it, I have to have it, and I have no joy in my life until I get it. And dafka, that one, in that color, that way. And I think if you study jealousy, I think we'll quickly see that it is a very dumb midah. And let me give you an interesting example. Two of the most brilliant individuals that were ever created were Adam and Chava. After Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas, she took from that same Eitz Hadas and gave it to her husband. Now, why she ate is obvious. She ate because she was seduced. The Eitz was Nechmad Le'inayim. There was a certain appeal to it. The Nachash was involved. Bottom line is, she sinned. But why did she give that fruit to her husband? So it's very clear from Chazal why she did it. She understood when Hashem created Adam and Chava, Hashem put them in Gan Eden and gave them one single mitzvah. The mitzvah was not to eat from the Eitz Hadas. Chava also understood that the punishment for violating that one mitzvah was Misa. Hence, she understood that once she ate from that Eitz Hadas, she was going to die, and she was correct. And because of that, she specifically took that very fruit and gave it to her husband so that her husband should die as well. And maybe you think it's because she didn't love her husband. Quite the opposite. It was gufa because she very, very much loved her husband that she gave him the fruit to eat. And says Rashi, what's pshat? Shalotamos hi, so that she should not die, v'yichyehu, and he should live, v'yisa acheres, and he'll marry somebody else. You see, my own death, I could deal with that. My own death and being separated from my husband, even though I love him, even though I'm attached to him, I could deal with that. But if I die, Chava said to herself, he's left alone. What's Hashem going to do? Hashem's going to create another Chava. He's going to marry another woman. I can't stand that thought. I love him too much. Hence, I kill him. Oh, that's real smart. I love him so much that I kill him. You know, the praying mantis, right after the mating, the woman, the female mantis will eat the male. But this is, it's an insect. We're dealing with the most brilliant woman who ever lived. The handcraft of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whatever you hear about Adam is true about Chava. And yet she does something so unintelligent, so dumb. And I think that's our first clue in understanding this midah. And the first point is that it is 100% outside the realm of intellect, outside the realm of das. It's not something that a person thinks about. It's a midah. And amida means it's an emotion, it's a feeling, it's a hagasha, it's a sense. But it's not guided by intellect, not governed by intellect, and in fact, it's the exact opposite. And I'll share with you an interesting observation. There is a gentleman in Muncie who has a reputation of being a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He is supposed to be Baki in Shas, Bavli, Yerushalmi, Shulchan Aruch, Kol HaTorah Kula. And needless to say, I am jealous of him. You might assume that because I'm jealous of him, I avoid his company at all costs. Not only don't I avoid his company, not only do I try when I can to be in his company, but I think he's actually quite good for my midos. And I'll explain to you why. It's very, very simple. If ever there is a little shemitz, a little fleck of arrogance in my heart, I conjure up a picture of him in front of me, and I shrink down to thimble size. And he's quite good for my midos. Ah, you'll ask me, what about jealousy? What about kinna? Kinna is supposed to be one of the most driving forces in a human that'll kill you. I have them from the Reshiva an interesting Masorah. The Reshiva defined that there are two types of kinna. There is a kosher kinna and a treif kinna. And the distinction is very clear. If I see that you have something and I want it, that's not necessarily a problem. If I see something that you have and I want it and you shouldn't have it, that's a problem. You see, if I see a great Talmud Chacham and I say, great, you're learning, that's great, I want you to have that and more, you should continue to grow, but I also want it, that's not treif. I want him to have even more. I don't forgive him for it. I want it also. That's the type of kinna that's kosher. That's a type of kinna that actually can be a driving force to help you grow. It's when you look at somebody and you say, ooh, he's got my thing. I want that and I don't want him to have it. That is treif kinna that will eat you up, that will destroy you. And one more chazal as an illustration to what kinna is about, and I think we'll have a better understanding. If you read the modern books on sibling rivalry, typically they love to quote the fact that sibling rivalry is innate to the human. In fact, from the time of Cain and Abel, brothers have been hating each other. And in fact, the reality is there's basis to what they're saying. Cain stood up and killed his brother Hevel. But it wasn't just that he killed Hevel, he invented this phenomenon called murder. You see, there were no situation comedies, there was no TV back then. No one had experienced or witnessed death before. So when Cain decided that he was going to make his brother dead, he didn't know how to do it. The Medrash says what he did was he took a rock and began pounding, but he didn't even know where to pound. So he pounded until there were holes in every part of Hevel's body, until finally he got to the tzavar, he got to the neck, and enough blood spurted out that his brother was left dead. And he discovered how to make someone dead. Now that's clearly a very driven person. Are you curious to know what they were fighting about? Interestingly enough, says the Medrash Rabbah, Parsha Chav Beis, Cain and Hevel were fighting about this issue. Bov v'nechalekes olam, let us divide up the earth. You see, they were both heirs to Adam Arishon. When Hashem created Adam, Adam was given planet earth as his property. These two sons were the sole inheritors, hence they were splitting up, they were dividing the earth. Now, gentlemen, I don't pride myself as being a particularly good mediator, but I believe that I could somehow divide planet Earth amongst two people, right? I mean, listen, you take Greenland, you take Antarctica, I mean, here's Asia for you, here's Africa. I mean, I think 24,000 miles in circumference, somehow we could figure out a way to get two people satisfied, right? Right? What are you fighting about? There's not, you can't possibly walk all the places, you can't possibly swim all the rivers. What do you need planet Earth for? And gentlemen, that is the Yesod. Would you like to know why Cain and Hevel were fighting over the earth that they could never use? The answer is kinna never has to do with the material object. Kinna is never about the object we're fighting about. Kinna is a competition between me and between you. The object, whether it's the car, whether it's the raise, whether it's the position, is the manifestation of the competition. But it's a competition between you and I that is the fight. It manifests itself in honor, in money, in position, in material possessions, but it's the competition between you and I that is the driving force of kinah. And in fact, it's worthy to study little children, because you'll see sibling rivalry exactly on things that really, really don't matter to either child. My mother-in-law had an interesting way of dealing with the splitting. You know, kids fight about who gets which piece of chocolate cake, which piece. My mother-in-law had a simple solution. Whenever there was a piece of cake left and the two kids were fighting, the rule was one child splits, the other one picks first. You better believe that slice, well, it was sliced right down the middle. I mean, absolutely the perfect, perfect division, so that my brother should not have one crumb more than me, even though both children did not particularly like chocolate cake. Oh. You see, you know what the pshat is? It's not about the cake. I don't need the cake. I don't care about the cake. It's you, it's me, and we are in competition. The cake is the manifestation. The car, the money, the position, the wife, the house is the way the competition manifests itself, but it's the competitiveness that is kinah, that is the danger of kinah, that will drive a person from this earth. And I want to share with you something very interesting to note. If you study how a person feels when he has jealousy in his heart, it starts out innocently enough. The guy drives up in that car. Whatever that car is, that car that I wanted, that car that he's now driving. The first thing that crosses my mind is, why does he deserve it and I don't? Is he better than me? What, does he learn more? Does he give more tzedakah, more chesed? Why does he deserve it and I don't? That's step one. Step two is, you know something? He doesn't deserve it. There's no reason why he should have it and I shouldn't. As a matter of fact, I should have it. By all rights, that car should be mine. I have more rights to it. It should be mine. And it's not. Now, wait a minute. Why is that car not mine? That should be my car. That's my car he's driving. As a matter of fact, he's stealing my car is what he's driving down the street right now. And gentlemen, if you think I'm exaggerating, watch the words that come out of people's mouth when they're in a fit of jealousy. Do you know why it is that people, when they're jealous, can say such things that make your hair stand on end? Good, kind people will say the most nasty, hurtful things out of jealousy. You know why? Because there's a real sense within me that you stole that from me. Now, once you've done something so egregious as steal my car, my position, my honor, whatever it is, you're an eiswurf. You are no longer in the category of a mensch. Hence, anything can be done to you. You, the guy who stole my thing, you're not deserving of honor. You're not deserving of respect. I don't have to treat you like a human being. And in fact, you'll see people, good, kindly people, say things when they're jealous of another human being that's frightening to hear. I know two women, two very good, firm women. They'll do a chesed for you at the drop of a hat. Very fine women. They were as close as sisters for years. Something happened. She took, I don't know who, what, when. Before you know it, they were arch enemies to the extent that they couldn't walk into the same room together. And I was very involved in the situation. And for the life of me, I cannot tell you what it was. But I can tell you, and once that seed of jealousy, once that seed of competition of she took my thing came into the picture, it was over. Women who were as close as sisters were not talking to each other, filled with fury. And I believe, my friends, that that's exactly what was happening with Yeravam ben Nevat. You see, at that moment, he was challenged. Mi barosh, yes. David HaMelech and I were walking Gan Eden, but who's first? Who's walking first? And he did something that was so dumb. He said, if I'm not first, I'm not playing the game, because he was overwhelmed by jealousy. And he did something that was absolutely, completely dumb. There was no intelligence to it. If you're not going to be Warren Buffett, if you're number two, and you're not going to be number one, so you're going to sleep on a park bench? But that's what he did. But he did it because it's not intellectual, it's not intelligent. He was overcome with an emotion, he was overcome with a midah called kinah, and that was it. With that midah, with that jealousy, there's no intelligence, there's no seichel, but even more than that, why was he so concerned with position number 6 or number 7? He knew anyway he wasn't going to be Avram, he wasn't going to be Moshe. Why did he care so much? The answer is quite simple. We only compete with those who are in our league. You see, he never saw Avram Avinu, and he never saw Moshe Rabbeinu, but he did live during the time of the grand melucha of David HaMelech, and it was that which he was jealous of. And that's one of the great secrets of kinah. I'm not jealous of a man who's worth $100 million. I'm only jealous of the guy who's got 2 cents more than me. Because you see, he's in my league. You know, we went to yeshiva together. We were buddies growing up. And now look at him. Now look, we were the same. We walked the same path. We walked the same. And now look at him. And jealousy only stems from people with whom you can compete, with whom you can be competitors of. And I believe that that's what Yerovam ben Nevat was consumed by. And that's why in the end, he ended up throwing away his Olam Haba. And my friends, it's an interesting thing. There are many types of suffering on this earth. And you could find people who have seemingly good lives who suffer tremendously. Talk to an older single. Talk to an older single. He has a good life. Things are going well. But every Shabbos, it's very difficult. He's feeling very fifth wheel. She feels very out of it. And you'll talk to, you'll hear there's a lot of suffering. Talk to a married couple who have no children. First year, it's not so bad. Second year, it's getting a little rough. By the fifth year, every time they go to Chasana, they feel like all eyes are upon them. Every time they go to the mother-in-laws or his mother, they're suffering. Says Yerach HaTzadikim that all of that suffering is nothing. Nothing compared to self-inflicted suffering that a person can bring on himself. Because says Yerach HaTzadikim, if you are racked by kinah, if you are racked by jealousy, nothing, nothing in your life will bring you joy. Your car is a dilapidated, broken down hunk. Your beautiful home is a worthless junk. The food you eat, the woman you marry, the job you have, your children, everything, everything that brings a person nachas and joy is devalued, and you walk around with a pang, with a anger, with a pain in your heart, because every time you see him, and every time you see that he's got what you want, you're eaten up. And if you would like to find a formula for misery, allow jealousy to enter your heart. Now, that being said, we see from Yerovam ben Nevat a tremendous danger of jealousy. You see from Chava how dumb it could be. What do you do about it? How does one work on jealousy? And I think, my friends, that this is really one of the easier midos to work on, because it's so far outside the realm of intellect. That's goofy why it's easy to work on. You see, one of the greatest solutions to any jealousy is a very simple question to ask yourself. And that question is, who runs the world? Meaning, if in fact I accept that Hashem created the world and Hashem runs the world, how much money a person is to make, which person a person is to marry, which house a man is to live in, which field he is to buy, is set by Hashem before the person is born. If I understand that Hashem is involved and meets out to each individual their exact life setting, what they're supposed to have, what shayach kinah? You see, jealousy, my friends, means that I feel you took it from me. You see, again, if you have a beautiful car or a beautiful house, and I say, that's great, have it and more, I just also want it, that's not treif kinah, that's not a problem. It's when I want that car, that house, that woman, that's kinah. But that's also apikorsis. Because what I'm saying is that either Hashem is not involved or Hashem made a mistake. Because if I accept that Hashem gives out things, whether it be position or honor or money, then I also accept that Hashem is just and Hashem gives each person what they deserve. And if I look at you and say, I want that item, what I'm doing is I'm denying Hashem's involvement. Number one. Number two, it's pretty easy to defang kinah, because all I have to do is say, okay, you can have it and I can have it. There are very, very few items in the world of which there's only one. There are plenty of BMWs. There are plenty of million-dollar homes. There are very, very few items that you'll find in this world that there's only one of. And typically, that's not the area of jealousy. It's honor, it's position, it's money. So if I say the following words, it's true, I want it. And maybe I'm not on a level to have such bitachon that Hashem gives it all. But all I have to do is say to myself, fine, have it, keep it. I want you to have that house, the position, the honor. I also want it. You defanged the kina. Because then it's no longer treif. I'm no longer competing with you. I want you to have it and more. I also want it. And what you do is you neutralized the kina. You took it from a midah ra that destroys you to quite the opposite. And because of that, I think jealousy is very much subject to one simple solution. And that is talking to yourself, thinking, saying to yourself a very simple thing. I am green with envy. I'm unbelievably jealous of him. One simple question. Did he steal the car from me? Yeah, he did. No, he didn't. Stop it. You don't have a title. What are you lying to me? He didn't steal it from me, right? Okay, good. All right, he didn't steal it. Number two, who gave it to him? Hashem. Again, who gave it to him? Hashem. You got to talk to yourself in your brain. Say it to him. Who gave it to Hashem? Is he the only one who can have that car? No. Can I have one also? Yeah. You're gone. There's no jealousy anymore. If Hashem gives it to him, and if I understand that there are plenty others, I don't forgive him from it. I don't have a problem with it. Have it and more. I've neutralized the kinah. And that's why kinah is very subject to thinking, to intellect. Hence, it's a very solvable midah. My friends, I think it's a tremendous, tremendous lesson to learn from Yeravam ben Avot. Here is a man. Here is a man who not only sold himself to the devil, he destroyed a generation. He took a generation of Jews. For 22 years, he was melech. He took an entire generation of the Jewish nation and plummeted them to their depths. Why? Because of one midah ra, because of kinah. But not only did he bring them to such abysmal depths, when Hashem offered him, chazor b'cha, return, here it is. You can do tshuva, you'll be accepted back. You, I, and David HaMelech will walk together. He refuses. You see the stupidity, the rank stupidity, of kinah. You see a woman like Chava, brilliant, brilliant woman doing something so dumb. You see the folly of it. You learn from that to apply it to yourself. But more than anything, when you see Cain and Hevel fighting about something that's so silly, something that you can never use in your entire lifetime, something you can never walk, you begin to get a glimpse, you begin to get an eye about what kin is all about. It's not about the object, it's not about the raise, it's not about the position, it's about competition. And once you understand it, you're in the realm of solving it. And my friends, I want to share a very important point with you. Many people say, this doesn't apply to me. Listen, I have other issues, but kinah, jealousy is not my problem. Says Rav Elia Lapian, a very interesting thing, a bad midah is like a grenade. After the war, a grenade could be left and it'll sit there in a corner for 20 years and it won't disturb anyone. Until a little kid comes, plays with it, pulls out the pin, and boom, it wreaks havoc people's lives. Says Rav Elia Lapian, a midah can be the same. You could never have a problem, never have a problem. I don't even have jealousy. I'm not the kind of guy. I'm not a jealous sort of person. And then it'll go on for years, 5 years, 10 years, it'll be one situation. That one problem, that one issue where it gets you and then you're racked with kinah, you're destroyed. And once you're destroyed by kinah, remember, what happens is automatically he's ois mensch. You see, it's not just that I deserve it and he doesn't. He stole it from me. Within my subconscious mind is that thought, he took it from me, hence everything is mutter, I can do whatever I want under the sun. And it bears thinking about, it bears hearing now when you're not involved in the problem so that you can supply the one solution, which is das, which is intellect. And I want to close with a very important diuk in this Gemara. Rav Shach made a diuk in his Gemara. Says Rav Shach, if you pay very careful attention, watch what happens. Hashem grabs Yeravam by the shirt and says, Chazor b'cha, va'ani, va'ata, uben Yishai. I, you, and David will walk together in Gan Eden. Says Yeravam, who's first? Says Hashem, David's first. Rav Shach says, wait a minute. Before Yeravam responded, what was the order? Hashem said, You, and David walk together. Only after Yeravam said who's first, did Hashem say David's first. But before that, you know who was first? Yeravam. Because, my friends, it's a very interesting fact. Yerovam ben Nevat was slated to be greater than David HaMelech. He was hand-picked by Hashem to be the Melech to replace Shlomo. Not just that, you know what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says? When he was sitting in that field, when Achia Shiloni came over to his garment and ripped it up, says the Gemara, what that garment referred to was the fact that they were Osek B'Torah. And just like a Salma Chadosh, or just like a new cloak has no flaw in it, so too the Torah of Yerovam ben Nevat had no flaw. It was perfect. As a matter of fact, the Gemara goes on to say that Achia Shiloni and Yerovam ben Nevat, when they were sitting together, they compared to the rest of the Talmidei Chachamim of the generation, comparing a man to grass. There was no comparison because Achia Shiloni and Yerovam ben Nevat so towered over every other Talmud Chacham of the generation that there was no comparison. And you see a man from such potential heights going to such depth, and you understand a great yisod. And that great yisod is Mishagadol Mechavero, who is ever greater than his friend, Yitzro Gadol, his Yetzahara is greater, and there's a very important reason for that. You see, when Hashem created us, Hashem put us on this planet in balance and gave us the opportunity to grow or to shrink. The problem was that Yerovam ben Nevat was so great, he was such a powerful giant, that if he didn't have a Yetzahara that equaled it out, there wouldn't have been no Bechira, no growth, hence no purpose in his being. And now, my friends, you could hear the greatest solution for Kina on the face of the planet. Says the Rambam, there are basically three things to be jealous of a person of: wealth, honor, money. My friend, Yerovam ben Nevat had it all. Not only was he the king, not only did he have all the honor that honor can buy, he had all the money, he was wealthy beyond belief. But typically in our world, when you meet a man who gets great honor, or has a lot of money, you know that he has very little olam haba. This man not only was the melech, he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He had it all. He was the man who was to rival Mashiach Hashem. He was the man who was the apex. This was to be one of the great men of eternity. And when you look at a man like that, you say, how can I not be jealous? How can I not be racked with envy for such a position? Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, he's got it all. And my friends, it's true, he has it all. But keep in mind that if you have it all, there has to be something that weighs out against it. And as great as he was his Yetzahara. And remember this Yesod, whatever someone has, there's going to be something that balances it out. And the next time you look at Yenim and you say he's got money, he's got covered, he's got learning, he's got a great life, no one understands there's going to be a balance. Because Hashem is the Shofet Mishpat, Hashem is just, Hashem gives each person the perfect life setting for them. Hence there's no opportunity for jealousy. Because when you see the person with the perfect life, no one understands there's a lot you're not seeing behind the surface. It is a midah that can drive a person from the greatest heights to the greatest depth, but it's a midah that's salvable. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow us the wisdom and fortitude to see through this great facade and be able to solve this issue.
You've been listening to The Shmooze, presented by Teferis B'nai Torah. For more information on The Shmooze, please visit us at www.theshmooze.com, where you can download all the Shmoozin free of charge, as well as view source sheets and address questions or comments on this or any other Shmooze. The Shmooze is completely funded by private donations. We need your help to continue our work. All donations are tax deductible and count as miser. Please help us help others by calling 866-613-TORAH. That's 866-613-TORAH. Or you can make your donation right on the web at www.theshmooze.com.